and welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and each week we bring you a classic show from radio's golden age. Studio One was a high-quality dramatic anthology that got great reviews from its beginning in 1947. Some of the greatest acting and producing talents of radio's heyday were involved, and it shows. We're going to give our listeners a few weeks of the best of Studio One. This week, we have a radio adaptation of F. Scott Fitzgerald's novel about Hollywood, The Last Tycoon. F. Scott Fitzgerald lived and worked in Hollywood as a screenwriter, and some people say The Last Tycoon was inspired by the life of Irving Thalberg, a famous producer who died at age 37 of a congenital heart problem that now can be fixed by surgery. Fletcher Markle, the multi-talented Canadian radio star, produces, directs, and acts in this excellent radio play. Enjoy Studio One, The Last Tycoon, first broadcast September 30th, 1947 on CBS.
Tonight, Miss Betty Field stars in The Last Tycoon from Studio One at CBS.
Hollywood for granted like I did, or you can dismiss it with the contempt we reserve for what we don't understand. But it can be understood, though not half a dozen men have ever been able to keep the whole equation of pictures in their heads. And perhaps the closest a woman can come to the setup is to try to understand one of those men.
We invite you to Studio One, radio's celebrated playhouse of dramatic entertainment, featuring the world's great novels, stories, and plays in special versions for listening. And now to introduce tonight's great story, here is the director of Studio One, Fletcher Markle.
Scott Fitzgerald was very surely a very special sort of person, even though he was the man who virtually invented, named, and nourished a period in American history known as the Jazz Age, and was at once the principal god and chief historian and most representative citizen of that age, he remains as a person and as a writer entirely authentic and original. A man with a great gift of radiance in all of his life and in all of his work, flashing with an old white light of the heart. And there wasn't and isn't anybody quite like him. Tonight we present you with our version for listening of Scott Fitzgerald's The Last Tycoon, the tender and yet remarkably perceptive story of a motion picture producer whose type is all too seldom found in the film world. Monroe Starr, at 36, was the first of the boy wonders, a man with a definite urge for total exhaustion, a man who lived in a kind of nervous, melancholy splendor in a Hollywood of more than 10 years ago. And to tell his story, to play Celia Brady, Mr. Fitzgerald's narrator of The Last Tycoon, we have with us in Studio One tonight one of the most unique talents of Broadway and Hollywood, Miss Betty Field. With Miss Field, you'll be hearing Mercedes McCambridge as Kathleen, with Everett Sloan as Wiley White, and I'm going to remain at the microphone with them to play Monroe Starr. Please to begin.
Monroe Starr, put together from scenes that I took part in, and some that I heard about, and others that I can only surmise. It began for me on a spring day in 1935, when I was flying home from college in the East. It began, as tides so often do in life, softly and innocently, and I didn't even know it was beginning. The plane was half empty in the late depression, and I sat alone, dozing as we slid over the tableland. Someone sat down on the seat beside me, and I opened one eye, and then I came quickly awake, looking into the slender face of Monroe Starr.
Hello, Celia.
Monroe, I didn't know you were on board.
I have the compartment, the bridal suite.
Oh?
Oh, nothing like that. Just working. No, pictures are my girl.
I've heard about that.
Just coming back from college?
Yes.
What are you going to do for the summer?
Explore the studios from within. I have to write my thesis on a producer's day.
Choose something else. People in the East pretend to be interested in how pictures are made, but if you actually tell them, you find that they only want to know about Colbert's clothes or Gable's private life.
I've had that experience. You look tired, Monroe. I noticed it when I haven't seen you in a long time.
I've no place to go in the evenings, so I just work.
I'll arrange some evenings for you when I get home.
I used to play poker with a gang before I was married. They all drank themselves to death.
I have no sympathy for them.
No, it really isn't necessary. There are better ways to die. And you, are you married yet?
Hardly. But it's been a good winter.
You have a boy, then.
I left all that behind with my exam papers.
People fall in and out of love all the time, don't they?
Every 3 years or so, Fanny Bryce says. Saw it in the paper this morning.
I wonder how they manage it. I know it's true because I see them, but they look so convinced every time.
You've been making too many movies.
I've thought that, too.
Take me to dinner tomorrow night.
All right.
We sat in silence for a while, and I looked at him, and his dark eyes took me in, and I wondered what they would look like if he fell in love. They were kind, aloof, and though they often reasoned with you gently, somewhat superior.
The pilot threw me out, Monroe. He says only producers are allowed up front. Oh, excuse me.
Sit down, Wiley. You know Celia Brady.
No, I don't. Hello.
Hello.
Beware of him, Celia. He's a writer.
I like writers. When you ask them a question, you generally get an answer.
Thank you, ma'am, for the kind testimonial. Monroe, Manny Schwartz is still hoping.
I have nothing to say to him.
He's in pretty bad shape.
He's a nervous wreck. I don't mean to be short with him, but I have nothing to say.
Oh, here he is.
Monroe, please, could I see you a minute?
Can't it wait?
It would just take a minute. We could sit up front.
I'm very tired.
It would just take a minute.
All right, let's go up front. Excuse me, Celia. I don't know why this couldn't wait, Manny.
Brady... Pat Brady's daughter?
Yes.
Well, hello. I wish I'd known.
I don't see what difference it would make.
What's it like to be a great, rich executive producer's daughter, huh? That's a framework I can't fit myself into. What was it like to be born in Hollywood?
I don't remember. I've been told they previewed Birth of a Nation the day I was born. And Rudolph Valentino came to my 5th birthday party. Does that help?
Well, it gives atmosphere.
Do you write for Monroe?
I'm his personal man. Speeches and screenplays. I'm making a comeback. Monroe Starr, I hate his guts.
You don't.
Well, I hate him until he likes my work.
I've known him since I was 7. He was 22. He became father's partner that year.
They're after him now, and maybe they'll get him. But when they're all dead, Monroe Starr will be remembered as a marker in the industry, like Edison and Lumiere and Griffith and Chaplin. He's my man, the last of the producer princes.
You've lost me. Who's after him?
Oh, here he is. Still pursued.
Let it go, Manny. Just forget it.
I advise you for your own good, Monroe.
I dislike advice for my own good.
I warn you to look out. I know what I say. You're the best of them, Monroe.
I'm sorry, Celia. Why don't we have dinner sometime?
That's all been arranged.
And I'm going east to college next year. Knowledge is power.
You're straining a little, Wiley.
Even as a little girl, I'd always wanted to marry Starr. I'd always wanted to make him love me. For my purposes, I was just as probable as the great beauties who must inevitably have thrown themselves at his head.
Fasten your seatbelt, please. We're landing in 5 minutes.
The California moon was out, huge and orange over the Pacific. And I could see a line of lights for the Long Beach Naval Station ahead and to the left. And on the right, a twinkling blur for Santa Monica. We were descending to the place that I had first opened my eyes on, and to which Starr had come as an extraordinary youth of 22, already a money man among money men. My father met us at the airport. Sleep here in the car if you like, Monroe. I'll wake you at the studio.
I'm wide awake now.
Monroe, we talked about the South America picture while you were east.
Father, Monroe is tired. Let's not talk business.
I've decided to go ahead with the picture, Pat.
That same budget?
Yes.
There's not a $2 million gross in the country now.
Probably not.
There won't be any miracle in these times. No Hell's Angel to Ben-Hur when you throw it away and get it back.
It'll gross $1.75 million if we're lucky.
You expect to gross $250,000 short of the budget?
For 2 years we played safe, Pat. It's time we made a picture that'll lose some money. Write it off as goodwill. Bring in some new customers. And as you've said often enough at Academy dinners, we have a certain duty to the public.
Where did Wiley White get to at the airport?
He went off somewhere, wherever riders go.
You're still thinking in 29, Monroe. 35 is not the same. I think you forget.
I get frequent reminders. Celia, you should sit in with me at the Rushes. That'll give you some ideas.
The money will have to come from somewhere. Did you talk about wages in New York?
No, I didn't.
I thought you were going to.
The money will have to come from somewhere else. I won't go along with wage cuts.
Where else, I'd like to know?
I've thought it through, Pat. It'll be all right.
Well, here's the studio.
This is the place I haven't seen in a long time. You really make pictures in there?
You'll have to see more of it, little Celia.
Say, Monroe, I noticed one of these guys get off the plane you were on.
What guy?
One of these union birds. And there's that Wiley White of yours. He's got some funny ideas, too.
I like Wiley, Pat. He's all right. We'll meet in the morning. Thank you for coming out. All right, Celia.
Good night, Monroe.
With Monroe, it's like talking to Napoleon now.
He works too hard.
No one asks him to. He's, you know, a big man. He says what he'll do and what he won't do. He forgets who put him where he is.
He makes the pictures.
Lots of people can make pictures. Lots of people.
Not like Starr.
I don't understand him anymore. He's got a profit-sharing contract and he wants to make a picture that'll lose a quarter million. Now, let's talk of something else first. Why don't you bring some girls out from school? There are lots of rooms.
We'll talk about it.
Now you sound like him.
I'm sorry. It's nice to see you, Father.
Now I'm happy.
Wiley White was an intellectual of the second order. His jealousy of Star showed only in unguarded flashes and was mingled with admiration and even affection. I saw him in short bursts that summer. His dialogue was always a little forced, but that didn't matter. He took me to the screenwriter's ball, and on the night that Star met Kathleen Moore, which is perhaps where my story really begins. How good you sing.
You know, Celia, sitting here, I have thought we should marry. We should marry shortly.
You have a wife in the East.
The East is past. I love you. I love you more than I love your money, which is plenty. Maybe your father would make me a supervisor.
I am spoken for, I wish.
Star? Take me, honey. I'm just a boy. I'm just beginning. He's all pooped out.
He's only 36.
He's 96.
I asked him to come here tonight.
He's at a sneak preview in Glendale.
No, he isn't. He's right over there.
Where? Must have just come in.
There, dancing with that girl.
My, what sharp eyes you have.
Who is the girl?
I don't know. She's been sitting behind a pillar all evening.
I noticed her. She has style. Who is she? I've seen her before.
I don't know who she is. All I know is how he met her.
Well?
Remember the night of the earthquake?
Yes.
Star was at the studio. The water mains had broken, and the water was about 3 feet deep in the French village. Monroe went out on the back lot to be the commanding general. And then along came a head.
A head?
A head, an idol floating. A large head. The goddess Shiva, I believe it was. And sitting up on top of the goddess was a woman. First reported to be a personage, and then discovered to be nobody. She was brought down and brought over to Monroe. And there, staring at him from 5 feet away, was the face of his dead wife.
Of course, that's who she looks like, Minna Davis. That must have been a shock for Star.
Look at him now, all intent.
Do you mind dancing with me?
No, I don't mind.
But you're not enjoying yourself.
At my table, when you came in, they talked as if you were the Prince of Wales.
I'm not.
What are you?
I'm a producer.
They said you were a boy wonder.
I'll be that when I'm 60. You don't remember me.
You're the man who got me out of the flood on the back lot at that studio.
I never did find out your name.
Kathleen Moore.
You're not in pictures.
No. I suppose the girls are all after you to put them on the screen.
Well, they've given up.
You didn't want to put me in the picture?
No.
That's good. I'm no actor. I must go back now. I promised this time.
I don't want to lose you. Couldn't we have lunch or dinner?
I must go back. When I'm with you, I don't breathe quite right.
You're not married?
No, I never have been. But then I may be.
Someone there at the table?
No. What curiosity.
Will you come to the studio?
No, I don't think so.
Let me drive you home.
I have my own car, thank you.
All right, I'll have it picked up tomorrow.
You insist so. Isn't it enough that I don't want to see you?
Ordinarily. Please believe me, I'm way out of my depth already, but I must see you again and talk to you.
All right, then. Perhaps I can telephone you.
I am not in the least joking.
Wiley, you've been drinking, and besides, you don't like Hollywood.
Oh, sure, I like Hollywood.
I like Hollywood.
Anything could happen to anybody here. Manny Schwartz liked Hollywood, too.
That's a familiar name.
It should be. He was on the plane with us coming out.
I remember, but I didn't see him after...
After Nashville. He got off at Nashville at 4 a.m. He got a taxi and he drove out to a house that hadn't been lived in for more than 100 years. The home of Andrew Jackson. And there, in the first sun of a fine morning, he chose to put a bullet in his head.
Oh, no. Why?
He was the head of some big studio combine once. But he came to his end. You know, I remember the note he sent to Monroe. You are the best of them all. I've always admired your mentality. So when you turn against me, I know it's no use. I must be no good, and I'm not going to continue the journey. Let me warn you once again. Look out. I know your friend, Manny. I need a drink.
I think it's my turn, Wiley. May I, Celia?
Where have you been?
Sure. You have more money than I have.
How did your little meeting go?
Oh, just fine.
$1,500 a week, Celia, and he's unhappy because he hasn't got a union.
Dance with me, Monroe?
Go ahead. You know where to find me.
I want to find you at the studio at 9.
All right, I'll see you at 9.
Well, where have you been?
Oh, I meant to call you. We're having our problems, Celia.
So I gather from listening to Father.
Somebody told me you were going to marry Wiley White.
And you had no reaction?
Yes, I did. I was going to speak to you about it. Waitley's been sober 2 years. 2 years from tonight.
I'm not even considering it, Monroe. What could I do to interest an interesting man?
Tell him you're in love with him?
Should I chase him?
Yes.
I don't know. If it isn't there, it isn't there. Anyhow, it's good dancing now. That began my night out with Star, which I approached with high hope, though I was never to win anything more from him than an affectionate regard, tempered by his dislike of Father. We went to a place I knew and sat with some people I knew, and about 4 o'clock we ran into a friend I'd met with Wiley. I knew he was a labor man from New York, but it didn't seem to matter. He and Star kidded each other in the great American tradition. And all I thought was that they were two of the most alert men I had ever seen.
What are you people trying to do? You got my young men all upset.
Well, that keeps them awake, doesn't it?
First we let half a dozen Russians study the plant as a model plant, you understand, and then you try to break up the unity that makes it a model plant.
Unity? Do you mean what's known as the company spirit?
Celia, I like your friend. He's crazy, but I like him.
It's time to go home.
Born on this side, Brimmer?
Oh, yes. Several generations.
Many of them like you?
My father was a Baptist minister.
I guess some of you believe the stuff.
Quite a few.
Not you.
Oh, yes.
Maybe you did once, not anymore.
Perhaps the shoe's on the other foot. But in your heart, Mr. Starr, you know I'm right. You just think the system will last out your time.
Brimmer, I'd like to put you in a room full of my partners. They've all got a dozen reasons for having you fellas run out of town.
We appreciate your protection. Frankly, we do find you difficult. Precisely because you are a paternalistic employer and your influence is very great.
Come along, Monroe. You're playing and he's working.
You won't last, Brimmer.
We'll see. I think your days are numbered.
Whatever you make of Star, if you make anything yet, one thing is certain. He led motion pictures way up past the range and power of the theater, reaching a kind of golden age before the censorship. Every 8 days in that year of 1935, the studio turned out a production as complex and costly as Reinhardt's Miracle, and Starr's personal mark was on every foot of it. His day began at 9 a.m.
Prince Aggie of Denmark. Denmark came in, Mr. Starr. I sent him out on the sets. And Mr. Boxley is here, looking very angry in a British way.
Something not going well, Mr. Boxley?
I can't get what I write on paper. You've all been very decent, but it's a sort of conspiracy. Those two hacks team with me, listen to what I say, but they spoil it.
Why don't you write it yourself?
I have. I sent you some.
But it was just talk. Interesting talk, but nothing more.
I don't think you people read things. The men are dueling when the conversation takes place. At the end, one of them falls down a well and has to be hauled up in a bucket.
Would you write that in a book of your own, Mr. Boxley?
What? Well, naturally not.
You'd consider it too cheap.
Movie standards are different.
You ever go to the movies?
No, almost never.
Isn't it because people are always dueling and falling down wells?
Well, I keep wishing you could start over. It's this mass production.
That's the condition, Mr. Boxley. There's always some lousy condition. Our condition is that we have to take people's own favorite folklore and dress it up and give it back to them. Anything beyond that is sugar. So won't you give us some sugar, Mr. Boxley?
Canada, Mr. Starr. It's snowing on location. They want to know what to do. And Mr. Red Ridingwood is here.
I'll see Mr. Ridingwood. Red, you got down on your knees to direct that picture.
It's going fine, Monroe.
You've been photographing junk. Do you know what the girl reminds me of in the rushes? Miss Foodstuff.
I'm trying to get the best performance.
You can't handle her. I told you I wanted her mean, and she comes out bored. We'll have to call it off,
what,
Red.
What, the picture?
No. Harley's in there now. He read the script last night.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
You lost interest 3 days ago.
Twice each day, at 2:30 and at 6:30, Starr sat in his projection room watching the lengths of film taken during the day. There was always a savage tension there, for he was dealing with the net results of months of buying, planning, writing, and rewriting, casting, constructing, lighting, rehearsing, and shooting. Starr's day rarely ended before 11, and sometimes he slept in his office. Once a week that summer, Dr. Baer came with a portable cardiograph machine and tested Monroe's heart. But I never knew exactly just what went on there.
I want to get a Miss Kathleen Moore on the telephone.
Where will I find her?
Try all the phones that have been installed under Moore in the past 6 months.
Monroe, I've been going over some of my own figures here, and for the life of me, I can't see any way around a general reduction of wages.
That's up for discussion at the next board meeting, Pat.
I know, but you keep blocking it. You keep stalling it off. I don't know whose pocket the money is going to come from, but I'm certain it isn't going to be mine.
If we have to cut, we'll start at the top and work down.
How did you find me?
It wasn't too difficult. Where would you like to go?
I'd like tea, if it's some place you're not known.
There's a place nearby. Kathleen, what are you trying to hide?
Perhaps the future. You've such a gentle way, I don't see why they're all afraid of you. You're so pale. Do you work very hard? Do you really always work on Sundays?
Not always. Once we had a house with a pool and people came on Sundays. I played tennis and swam. I don't swim anymore.
It's good for you.
My legs got very thin a few years ago and it embarrassed me.
You have a good build. A little thin, perhaps. Did you always want to be in the movies?
No, when I was young, I wanted to be chief clerk. The one who knew where everything was.
That's odd. And now you're much more than that.
No. I'm still chief clerk. Look, There's the ocean.
What place is this?
Santa Monica. I'm building a house out here, much further on. I don't know why I'm building it.
Perhaps it's for me.
Perhaps it is. But it hasn't a roof.
We don't want a roof. They told me it never rained here.
What made you stop?
Just something that's passed.
Another house without a roof?
Yes, another house without a roof.
Were you happy there?
I was in love with a man for a long time. Too long, really. It was one of those awful mistakes that people make.
Here's the place I spoke of.
I've changed my mind. I don't want tea.
All right. We'll drive on.
What will you do with your house? Will you live there all alone?
Probably. I used to make plans, but not anymore.
What do you want of me?
I don't know.
People have told me I look like Minna Davis. Several people have told me that.
You look more like she actually looked than how she was on the screen.
I like being with you.
I'm glad you do. We'll have dinner later.
No, I'm sorry. I have an engagement.
The man you spoke of, were you really in love with him?
Oh, yes. With all my heart. We'd better turn back now.
All right.
Thank you.
May I come in?
I'm sorry. Forgive me if I've been mysterious. It was really a compliment because I like you so very much. You should try not to work so hard. You ought to marry again.
That sounds very final.
Perhaps it had better be.
I...
No.
Don't look away.
Please don't.
Kathleen.
Really, I don't...
Be still. I don't know what you think of me or whether you think of me at all, but you're the most attractive woman I've met since I don't know when. I can't stop looking at you.
Stop that. You have me looking in the mirror for weeks. I'm just as ordinary as can be. I couldn't hold a candle to these girls I see here.
What I said is true. I'm a cautious man. What is it? Have you lost something?
It might have fallen off.
Or was it?
A letter. I had it in my purse.
Was it important?
No.
Or if it's in the car, I'll find it and mail it for you.
All right. Good night, Mr. Starr. Thank you. I liked it.
What did you call me?
Good night, Monroe.
Good evening, Mr. Starr.
Charlie, did Mr. Marcus call?
Mr. Marcus, Mr. Laborwitz, Miss Harlow, Mr. Reinmund, Mr. Fairbanks, Mr. Brady, Mr. Coleman, Mr. Skouras, Mr. Fleischmann.
Excuse me, Mr. Starr. I found this letter in the car when I was putting it away.
Oh, thanks. Would you mind dropping it in a mailbox?
It's addressed to you, Mr. Starr.
What? Well, thank you.
In half an hour, I will be keeping my date with you. When we say goodbye, I shall hand you this letter. It is to tell you that I am to be married soon, and that I won't be able to see you after today. I should have told you the first time we met, but it didn't seem to concern you then. And it would be silly to spend this beautiful afternoon telling you about it and watching your interest fade. Let it fade all at once. Now. I am very flattered that anyone who sees so many lovely women... I can't finish this sentence, but you know what I mean. And I shall be late if I don't go to meet you right now. With all good wishes, Kathleen Moore.
Will you be running a picture tonight, Mr. Starr?
No. Not tonight, Charlie. You can go to bed.
From Studio One, radio's celebrated playhouse of dramatic entertainment, you are hearing Miss Betty Fields starring in The Last Tycoon, a version for listening by Hugh Kemp of the F. Scott Fitzgerald novel. Studio One will resume after the customary pause for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. From Studio One, we continue tonight's full-hour dramatic entertainment. Miss Betty Fields stars in Fletcher Markle's production of The Last Tycoon by F. Scott Fitzgerald.
My second evening with Monroe Starr was something I'd rather forget. It couldn't have happened 6 months earlier. For reasons that I didn't suspect, we looked up Mr. Brimmer again. The labor man, as Star called him. We drank together in one of the places, and for the first time since I'd known him, Star drank too much. He got a silly, glassy look in his eye.
Celia, this fella has an influence over you. Over all you young people. I don't like it.
I do my own thinking.
Brimmer, where were you in the war?
In the Navy.
You hear that, Celia? Working on the Navy.
Now I know you've been disappointed in love.
What?
All those cocktails.
I never overdrink, Celia.
I counted them 5 and half an hour.
I didn't realize I couldn't taste them.
I think we'd better go.
Now I'm going to beat up Brimmer.
Oh, can't you pay somebody to do it?
I'm going to handle this thing personally.
Please go, Brimmer.
I do my own dirty work.
Monroe, please be good.
Brimmer, I'm going to beat you and put you on a train.
I always wanted to hit $10 million. I didn't think it would be like this.
Please go. He wasn't himself.
I'm sorry. Can I help?
No, just leave. I understand. That ended Starr's wretched essay of getting drunk. Then he was gone again to New York without calling me. I remember it was July 12th because it was the same night that one of our supervisors was killed by gangsters in a gambling brawl. The day after Monroe left, the axe fell at the studio. The wage cut finally happened, and I heard about it from Wiley White.
Nuts to this. I'm going east. I'm going to be a playwright. Maybe I'll go to work.
What's the matter? Have you been fired?
Oh, don't be ridiculous. It's pretty hard to flunk out of pictures. I'm not fired. Just cut down a little in the paycheck.
I'm sorry. I thought that wasn't going to happen.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I did. Why do you look at me like that?
Oh, that's nothing. Just the way I'm feeling.
Have you heard from Monroe?
Yeah, I heard from him last night. He's in Washington.
I thought he was in New York.
He's lying in a hotel in Washington. He's got summer flu. I think he went to Washington to find out where American ideals come from.
Stop it, Wiley.
He went to meet Washington and Lincoln, and all he found was a cold in the head.
Please get out. Come back when you've sweetened up.
All right.
There isn't anything else, is there?
You'll get it soon enough. Monroe, the big...
I got it the next morning from Monroe's secretary, and it was a Lulu. It seemed that Father had called a meeting of the directors and writers. He made a tearful speech to the effect that if they would join the executives in taking a 50% cut, then it wouldn't be necessary to reduce the clerks and the stenographers. All agreed, and then the clerks and the stenos got it too. That completed my disillusionment about Father. He hadn't learned much about the feeling of America as a bar boy in Ballyhegan, and I guess he hadn't acquired much at first hand.
Now, Celia, isn't it silly for you to worry about this?
Is it?
Well, something that hurts has to be done. Do it all at once. Get the hurt over with.
It didn't have to be done that way.
What way? What way? We had to reduce expenses. I didn't like it. None of us like it. It hits me, too.
Did Monroe agree?
Monroe. You'd think he was the only one. Let him make his pictures. Celia, why don't you just forget about the studios? You have the whole summer. You could be having so much pleasure.
Yes, Father. I had heard it said of Starr that he could give the most direct insult in Hollywood, aggressive and outright. I never saw him do it, but I saw the reflection of it in Father when Monroe got back from the East.
How did you give it to them, Pat? Did you cry for them? Did you do that weeping business of yours?
Now, sit down. Sit down, Monroe. I'll tell you how this thing happened.
I know how it happened. I've heard about it all day. What is this? What are you trying to do?
I'm trying to keep us in business, something you seem to have forgotten about.
You're trying to pick a fight with me? Is that what you're doing?
Listen to me. Will you listen? I'll tell you.
This is just aggressiveness, Pat. Stupid aggressiveness.
I did what had to be done in the interest of us all. The others agreed with me.
Did they? You must think I'm slipping to pull a thing like that while I'm away.
You're not facing the times. How long do you expect the European market to keep up?
Listen to me, Pat Brady. When I left here last week, I had Bremer and his boys held in check. Now, because of this fool thing you've done, they're swarming all over me.
They can be looked after. I have no sympathy for those fellows. No sympathy at all. They deserve what they'll get.
One thing has become abundantly clear to me. You're not fit to be left alone out here. Now, what's to be done?
There's nothing to be done.
Somehow, I don't know how yet, but somehow I'll get us out of this. And after that, you stick to the area of advising actors about their love lives. Move an inch out of that, and I'll call a director's meeting out here, and one of us will go, Pat. Get Miss Doolin in here.
What is it?
Glass of water.
You're not well. You try to do everything. Nobody asked you to. We have too much at stake to leave it all to a sick man.
Mr. Starr, do you know a Miss Kathleen Moore?
What do you mean?
There's a Miss Kathleen Moore on the line.
Oh, I'll put her on. Hello?
Hello, Monroe.
What's on your mind?
Oh, you did find that letter.
Yes. It turned up that night.
That's what I wanted to speak to you about.
What is it to say?
Oh, cheer up. This doesn't sound like you. It is Starr, isn't it?
I don't see the use of this.
Next thing, you'll wish me luck. Is this what you plan to say? I know how awful it is when you plan to say something.
Are you married yet?
No, not yet. I want to see you. I can't explain things on the phone.
I can't possibly get away. Things are very difficult here.
We could drive around this evening.
I don't think that would be wise.
Glad you changed your mind.
I shouldn't have.
That isn't very gallant.
I'm sorry.
I told you all about me last time. Let's talk about you tonight.
Or anything but that. That's what I want to get away from. Are you in love now?
Oh, yes. With someone who saved my life and my reason. I'm going to be a real person for him. I've made up my mind to that.
But are you in love?
Oh, yes. It's absolutely arranged.
Then why did you call me?
I wanted to see you once more. You're so nice. I do like to be with you.
Kathleen.
No, not tonight. Please.
All right.
You spoke of difficulty at the studio.
I've thought of giving up pictures.
No. No, you wouldn't do that. Not really.
It wouldn't take much. What are you frowning about?
Oh.
Oh, what?
I still wonder what you want with me.
You have a life of your own. You don't depend on me. Perhaps that's it. We'll see tomorrow.
Thank you.
what is it?
I thought you might want to see me, Monroe.
There's nothing special?
The script is going along.
I haven't read it. What's on your mind?
There's talk on the lot that we may have a company union.
I don't know how that got started, but it's correct.
You wouldn't be for a thing like that, would you?
It was my idea.
Isn't that a little behind the times?
As you well know, Wiley, I'm not for this thing at all. But if it has to come, this is probably the best answer. Certain things forced me to take an attitude in this guild matter. It looked to me like a try for power. And all I ever intend to give is money. Is that clear?
Very clear, Monroe.
Yes?
I called that number, Mr. Starr.
Yes?
Miss Moore isn't in.
Was there no message?
They said she was being married this morning.
I see. Thank you.
Is that all, Monroe?
Yes, that's all. I'm sorry you have to come to me with that stuff. You've never lost with me.
It's a little bigger than that.
I know all the dialectics. Do you know my final reaction to all that junk?
I wish I did.
Boredom. I've talked to the soapbox boys about it, and that's one thing, but I never thought you'd bring it into my office.
I'm sorry I did.
My job's right here. If anybody can take it, just let them take it.
Celia, isn't it time you stopped looking that way and did some laughing around the house?
I'm sorry.
Wouldn't you tell me about it? I've fixed things before now for you.
Oh, everything is so complicated this summer.
It's always mixed up in this business. Now, you're not still angry with me about that wage situation at the studio.
The way things look now, it'll never be settled.
Now, why it's all working out?
For who?
For the people. They're getting their union, they're getting their money, they're being well done by, but you've got to bargain a little. You can't give in all at once, or they'll put you right over a barrel.
I don't think I care.
Maybe it shouldn't be like that, but it is. I learned it young.
And Star didn't.
Are you still fussing about him?
I don't see him anymore.
But you've got a lot of young men. I see them all the time. I almost run over them.
I try to get rid of Monroe. I put him away every morning, and he comes back every night. Perhaps I'm just jealous.
What? The studio?
No, there's a girl.
A girl? Who?
I don't know much about her. She's Irish, and she's married. That's all I know.
I don't like the sound of that.
Nor do I.
That could rebound on the studio.
Father!
Well, he's got to think of more than himself.
Father, that just slipped out. That was a confidence.
Of course. I understand, dear.
Don't you knock anymore, Brady.
Never mind that.
What do you want?
I want to tell you that you're finished here. That's what I want. Saying what you'll do and what you won't do and brushing everybody else aside. You're finished now. You're finished yourself, Star.
You're crazy.
Taking my daughter out in public and running around with a married woman on the side.
Now, drop that. I won't have that kind of talk.
Oh, won't you now? I've had the matter well looked into and turned up Miss Kathleen Moore, Mrs. Kathleen Bronson.
How much lower can you get?
Suppose Mr. Bronson brings suit against you. I think he might do that.
Go on.
Then you see what a nice mess the studio will be in, and Celia, too. And another thing. If Bronson does file suit, the pictures of Minna Davis will come out of the file. There'll be in every yellow rag from one side of the country to the other. Get out, Star. I've called a special meeting of the board here next week. Tell them you're quitting. You're quitting because you're sick.
What is it?
Mr. Reinman.
Not now.
He's shooting, Mr. Starr. He's calling from the set.
Later.
I knew nothing of that till long after. I only knew what I saw with my own eyes and what I heard from Wiley, that Starr was failing. Wiley White came to the house late one evening, and we sat outside and watched the man cutting his grass down below us. There was a midsummer restlessness abroad, early August, with imprudent loves and impulsive crimes. This thing between Father and Monroe is so bitter, I'm afraid.
So is Monroe.
Monroe was never afraid of anything, Wiley.
He's afraid now. He doesn't even make pictures anymore. He patrols the corridors like Hamlet. I think it was Hamlet.
Why does it have to be like this?
I told you once, and you didn't believe me. This is a tough town. It's a mining town in Lotus Land.
Monroe is soft. He's too gentle to stand up against Father.
Oh, you delude yourself. He's in the same business. Starr used to like to tear the town apart every 3 months just to see if the old thing was still there. It was, and is. But he can't handle it anymore. He's a dying species, honey. The last of the guys who do it all themselves. The last of the tycoons. He picked his friends and he made his enemies. And now he doesn't know which is which because the times have gone past him. And I couldn't care less.
I went to see Monroe for the last time. I walked straight up to his desk and put my head down among his telephones and looked up at him. And what I was looking at wasn't Star, but a picture of him I'd cut out over and over since childhood. The eyes that flashed a sophisticated understanding at you and then darted up too soon into his wide brow with its 10,000 plots and plans. A face that now was gray and aging from within, so that there were no casual furrows of worry and vexation, but a drawn asceticism, as if from a silent, self-set struggle or a long illness.
Why have you come here, Celia?
To take you away.
Away where?
We have a place in the mountains. I'll take you there. I'll look after you and you'll get better.
There's nothing wrong with me.
I know you're sick. I can't help knowing it. I know you don't love me, but you don't need to love. You need someone in the background to look after you and make you strong again. I can do that for you.
Can you?
I think I can. Will you give me the chance?
Not that way.
I'm afraid of what will happen if you go on like this.
I won't.
A few months of doing nothing would help you so much.
I'm beyond that now.
Oh, Monroe. Monroe.
Oh, little Celia. Marry a nice boy. I'll choose him for you.
Will you?
Now, you must go. Out this way so that no one will see your eyes are running. Wiley?
I said I'd be around, Monroe, but I hope you don't need me.
The directors are waiting for me in Flyshacker's office. Brady's in there. He thinks he can skin me alive. Maybe you can. Wall Street thinks I'm a red now.
Oh, great.
I've made the pictures here. I've always felt that if I had the people behind me who helped make the pictures, I could carry anything. But if I lost that support... What I want to know from you, Wiley, is what can I count on now?
Excuse me, Mr. Starr, but the directors have been waiting 15 minutes.
Thank you. Well?
You can't count on much. Perhaps... three of the old-timers.
That's all?
That's all.
Right, that's what I wanted to know. So long as you know where you stand.
Monroe.
Yes?
I'm sorry. Whatever comes after you won't be as good.
Starr didn't go to the directors' meeting that day. Instead, he left the studio and called for Kathleen, and together they drove out to the beach, to the house that he was building. I saw that house later, still unfinished, beginning to dissolve back into its elements. One room, which was to be the chief salon, was completed even to the built-in bookshelves and the curtain rods and the trap in the floor for the motion picture projection machine.
This is the house I built for you.
And here we are.
Are you happy?
No.
Yesterday and tomorrow.
Oh, yes, quite happy. I did what I wanted to do.
What are the chairs doing in a house without a roof on it?
I gave a premature luncheon last week. I thought the place should be used. I had some props brought out and some grass and things. I wanted to see how it felt.
Isn't that real grass?
Oh, yes. It's grass.
Aren't you going to answer it?
No.
How do they know you're here? Why did you want to see me today?
Kathleen.
Oh, Monroe. I want it.
I want you. You're all I want.
Am I?
I'm going to leave the studio. We'll go away somewhere. We'll get you a divorce.
Is it what you really want?
Let me see you. There.
Again.
We walked out front here to the beach.
Yes. You seem far away.
So do you.
Are you surprised?
At what?
That we're two people again. Don't you always think, hope that you'll be one person? And then find you're still two?
I feel very close to you.
So do I to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. There's an old Negro man.
Yes, he's come far out for the grunion.
Say hello to him. I'm going to.
Hello. Is it going well?
Yeah, I'm with for another pail.
You've come a long way out.
Yes, I used to go to Malibu, but they don't like me fishing there. Those moving picture people. What's your work, mister?
I work for the pictures.
I never go to pictures.
Why not?
There's no good in it. I never let my children go.
Some of them are good.
Mm-mm, mostly trash. No, sir, I'll stick with books. Yep, I wish for another pail.
I'm chilly.
Oh, my darling.
Oh, Monroe. I do love you. But it's no good for you, is it?
I thought it could be. I tried to make it so.
I knew it never would be.
When did you know?
From the beginning?
There only was one woman.
Called very often, Mr. Starr.
I'm sure.
And Mr. Brady has been trying, and Mr. Markle...
It doesn't matter.
And Dr. Bayer is in the library.
Oh, I forgot about that. I'll go right in. Sorry I kept you waiting, Bill.
Hello there, Monroe.
Where's your machine?
I left the cardiograph at home. I thought we'd just have a talk today.
Whatever you say.
You remember 2 years ago when you laid off for a while? You improved a lot.
I'll get away again soon.
How about tonight?
Oh, I couldn't do that. I'm flying east tonight. What is it, Bill? Go ahead. I have to hand it to people sometimes.
Oh, the cardiograph readings remain about the same.
Well, if I hold my own, I can't ask for more.
You didn't tell me you've been fainting.
I thought I did.
When does it happen?
Different times. Last time it was 3 o'clock in the morning. I was working alone in my office.
What were you thinking? You remember?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
I remember very well. I was thinking that for a long time I'd not liked people. I'd been living by an old pretense of liking. Even old friends were no longer welcome, except perhaps once a year. There were sheets of paper on the desk in front of me, and I thought I'd been working on a picture idea. And I read through what I'd written, and it wasn't pictures, but just lists.
lists of cavalry leaders and football players and cities and happy times. Houses I've lived in. Women I'd liked. And I noticed it was 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock, I got up and went into the bathroom, hung over the sink for a minute. And then I looked up at the mirror, and what I saw wasn't my own face. Staring back at me out of the mirror was the perfect image of the death head. And it seemed not at all surprising, not at all unwelcome. In a real dark night of the soul, it is always 3 o'clock in the morning, day after day. Well?
Monroe, you don't take orders very easily, I know. But I think you'd better change your mind about going east.
That's all settled.
And unsettle it. I want to see you again tomorrow. I'll be over about 9 in the morning, and that's definite.
I'm going to make some new pictures, Bill. Good things. You'll like them.
That's fine.
This afternoon, I threw out 3 borderline pictures and put back 2 tough ones for an old Negro man.
Starr leafed through scripts for an hour after Dr. Bear left him, but he found reading difficult. My father was on his mind. My father, whom he knew would stop at nothing. Starr had been thinking about him for a long time. He was certain that Dad was planning to have him murdered. Starr decided to use my father's own methods. He made 1 phone call to the gangsters. At 9 o'clock, he drove himself to Glendale and talked to a few people waiting at the airport. Not about anything in particular. They said he seemed terribly tired, but they didn't notice any nervousness. At 9:30, the plane took off and headed east through the Rockies. And at 10 o'clock, its wreckage was strewn among the trees, and 12 people were dead against the mountain. Only the stewardess survived to stumble down into the valley and tell over and over again how the others had died. She brought the last word of Monroe Starr, of how he wanted to get off the plane just as it was taking off, and then later how he planned to leave it at the first landing place. I like to think that his tormented mind cleared in that final hour, and that he saw it all for what it was worth and revolted against what he had done. I think he was trying to get to a telephone to cancel the effect of the last call he had made, to break off that terrible contract he had framed with the gangsters as he believed in his own defense. But it was no good. And 2 hours later, Father was lying in the bushes at the end of the lawns with 3 bullets in his stomach, dying silently in the moonlight. Star's mother came out from the east alone, and she and Wiley White took Monroe back to Erie, Pennsylvania. That's about all. Except for 1 short encounter of my own. In the autumn of the year, on a rainy October evening, I was walking by the studio when I saw the figure of a woman standing, just looking. There was something familiar about her. And when she turned, I saw the face of the last woman to share his thoughts. All I'd heard of Kathleen Moore was that she'd been divorced and was now living alone somewhere up the coast. I'd never met her, but now I felt that I wanted to stop beside her. And I did. Hello.
Good night.
Excuse me, I thought I knew you.
I'm frequently mistaken for someone else.
You work at the studio?
No. No, I've never been in the studio.
I could take you in if you wanted to go.
No. Thank you. I think not.
I knew a man once. He was a very influential man. And he was always going to take me inside. But I never got there.
I left her standing in that wretched avenue, forever on the outside. And I went along past the great plant where Star had first come to Earth. After the extraordinary illuminating flight of his youth, where he saw which way we were going and how we looked doing it and how much of it mattered. You could say that this was where an accidental wind had blown him, but I don't think so. I would rather think that in a long shot, he saw a new way of measuring our jerky hopes and graceful rogueries and awkward sorrows, and that he came out here from choice to be with us to the end.
From Studio One at CBS, you have just heard Miss Betty Field starring in Fletcher Markle's production of The Last Tycoon by F. Scott Fitzgerald. Another of the world's great stories from radio's celebrated playhouse of dramatic entertainment. Tonight's script was prepared by Hugh Kemp, and the original musical score was composed by Robert Stringer and conducted by Alexander Semler. Now again, Mr. Markle.
Mayor, producer, identify the principals in our cast tonight. In the foreground,
Celia Brady.
Was played, of course, by Miss Field.
Kathleen Moore.
Was Mercedes McCambridge.
Wiley White.
Was Everett Sloan.
Pat Brady.
Was played by Ed Begley.
Mr. Brim.
Was Mark Lawrence. Miriam Wolfe played Miss Doolin. Hedley Rennie was Boxley. Alan Devitt was Dr. Baer. And Gregory Morton, Connie Lemke, Joe DeSantis, Morris Ellis, and John Merlin assisted. Monroe Starr was played by your producer. Next week on Studio One, we bring you The Angelic Avengers by Pierre-André Zell. And our guest will be a new and swiftly rising young star of Hollywood, Miss Anne Blythe. Until then, until next week, The Angelic Avengers starring Anne Blythe, this is Fletcher Markle with a good night and thank you from all of us in Studio One.
This is Lee Vines, and this is CBS, where 99 million people gather every week, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You have been listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. You can subscribe at no charge through Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or RSS. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you can join us again next week for another hour of entertainment from the golden age of radio. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying so long for a while.